my friends. I've got a song, I ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friends. Will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Will it go round in circles?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Top of the Charts Tuesday right here on the Rodcast. My man Patrick Davis, our co-host, coming up with all the musically themed days of the week, including a Top of the Charts Tuesday when he plays jams that reached the top of the Billboard charts on this day in history. So we appreciate all of the hard work my man Patrick puts in. Also, he comes up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll today, which will get posted on the X account for you at the Horn ATX here. Patrick, let the folks know what the topic is for the Big Fat Poll of the day.
Big Fat Poll of the day. Who will win the Big 12 this year?
That's good. I think it'd be good for the league if Colorado won it. I think the smart money for me would be on Utah or Oklahoma State right now. I could see K-State winning it too, just because if Avery Johnson has a big year, I could see them. But man, I like Chris Klieman, but this kind of reincarnation of K-State, they lose games that you don't expect them to lose, though. I will admit that. This other than kind of the older K-State groups, this group will lose some games you don't expect them to lose. So they're not as clutch as some of the K-State teams were in the past. Hell, Texas kind of proved that, right? I mean, go look, the Purple Kryptonite used to be, you know, something that Texas fans literally had to worry about, the Purple Kryptonite with K-State. That's what, you know, I started calling it that. And think about how Sark has performed against K-State. Hell, even Tom Herman had his share of success versus K-State. And it usually comes down to the wire. Right, it comes down to the wire to, hell, even the game this past season came down to a goal line stand. Remember Texas trying to beat them in 2021? You know, that was a tight game, you know, for Texas. Because, remember, they didn't have any running back. Bijan was hurt. They kept running the Wildcat over and over again, found a way to win that game. I think avoiding, I won't say what would have been the longest losing streak in, like, modern Texas football history. And K-State had Will Howard. They still had, you know, a lot of their major players in that game and still weren't able to beat. They're just not as clutch as they used to be, and I don't think they're going to be clutch in this version of the Big 12 either. They're good. No. They're good programming, good. They're not as clutch as the old K-State teams used to be. I know that because those K-State teams would beat Texas.
No,
these newer versions can't do it.
I am curious, too, in the new sense where there isn't necessarily – there is no blue bloods. Let's put it that way. There's no one in there – that is the common enemy anymore, where Texas and Oklahoma could be the common enemy a little bit more for everybody else to say, if we beat them, that's kind of the measuring stick, how these teams build their teams a little bit more based around themselves and what they're trying to build. I'm just curious to see what that league looks like, the ACC looks like, the Big Ten, the SEC. That's going to be one of those fun lines of college football this year, is watching how all these conferences kind of look a little bit different this year. And the Big 12 is very interesting because it's a lot of schools and none of them are really that bad. But at the same part, there's none of them that are great either. It's like you just said with K-State. K-State's one of your top schools, but also K-State's not really scaring anybody because you're not worried about them having that, you know, super clutch team. Utah's not really scaring anybody. I think Oklahoma State is that one where you say they're going to be well coached. They're going to play really well, but they just don't have the talent. They're not going to have that, you know, obscene talent.
No, because they don't want to embrace NIL or the transfer portal. So that's why Gundy, you're right, he won't ever have that. But that's not how Oklahoma State operates. But you make a good point. You know, a lot of the innovation in the Big 12, and I think it's probably been the most innovative league in college football over the last couple of decades. You know, the three high defense and the you know, the air raid, obviously Mike Leach being part of that. It's just been a really innovative league. And I think a lot of that, like you just pointed out, is these teams who know that they're going to be at a talent disadvantage and a talent deficit compared to Texas and Oklahoma. So everything that that they could conjure up all of their creativity, all their innovation went toward, all right, how do we close the gap? We got a talent gap. Texas and Oklahoma way more talented than us. How do we close that gap? And it was done creatively. It was done, you know, with schemes and concepts that may have been a little bit outside the box, may have been a little bit progressive for its time, but that is how a Texas Tech would close. It's like, no, we need Mike Leach in the air raid. That's how we close the gap. Iowa State saying, no, we need to start running this three high defense, three high safeties. That's how we're going to close the gap. Or it's, you know, Mike Gundy saying, all right, you know what, we're not going to recruit specific positions on defense anymore because we're wasting scholarships. We're going to recruit body types and we're going to recruit overall athletic traits. And then we're going to let those guys kind of evolve into whatever they evolve into. And if he doesn't work at corner, we'll move him to safety. Then we'll get safety, we'll move him to linebacker. We're going to start recruiting athletes on defense with versatility. And then he's kind of changed, and Mike Gundy kind of changed the game, right? Mike Gundy also started getting all these offensive coordinators from D3 levels, Shippensburg, and all these weird places because he wanted outside-the-box ideas to come, you know, infuse some innovation and creativity so he could close that gap. So all these teams, to your point, were trying to close the gap, and they were doing it creatively, which was leading to a lot of, you know, evolution, evolutionary adaptation, you know, by these defenses and by these offenses, and now they don't really have a program to strive to try to creatively close that gap. So, yeah, what now? What's your identity? The identity was easy back then. It was like, no, our identity will be based on what will help us close the gap between us and the best team in this conference, which is Oklahoma and Texas. Now, what now is the motive and what is their goal in their roster construction? It used to just be, because you're trying to win your conference, that's your ecosystem.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to win your. You got to be the king of your ecosystem, the apex predator of your ecosystem first, before you can move on to be in the college football playoff or go from your division in NFL to go to your conference, things like that. So how do you become the apex predator in your ecosystem? That's what you're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
And if I can't be the apex predator, how do I kill the apex predator?
Yeah.
If I can't be the apex predator, how do I take them down? And that was what the Big 12 – that has driven Big 12 innovation and creativity for a decade, and now what's going to drive it, basically.
Well, and that's it. That's what the Big 12 Media Days will be interesting, is a bunch of teams trying to say that we are going to be the apex predator.
Yes.
And then everyone else saying, well, no, but you can't be because I'm going to be.
Exactly. I think I'm the apex predator. And if there's a discussion about who the apex predator is, then none of y'all are the apex
predator.
Exactly. If we got to talk about it, then none of y'all are the apex predator. And that is going to be interesting because it was always Texas and Oklahoma, and everybody understood, yep, those are the apex predators in this league, in this ecosystem. You got to find a way to kill them. And you got to find a way to take them down. Now, yeah, what's the goal of your roster construction? What are you just doing it to individualize yourself and form your own identity, which would be great. But usually, even in the SEC, every league kind of has those apex predators that the rest of the league is constructing their roster and constructing their philosophy to take down and to conquer.
Yeah. And that's right, where you sit and you say, I mean, yeah, as good as Utah is playing right now, if they lose a few players, are they going to be able to stay atop? And it doesn't feel like Utah is going to be that team to stay atop. But we know what K-State has been. We know what all those other teams have been. And none of them have ever stayed at the top either. They have down years and up years. So is there going to be any team that can consistently in the Big 12? And then again, the Big 12 could be dissolved in 3 years anyway. This is how college football goes now.
You're right about that, too.
But, you know, is there any team that can stay up there? Or is this where everybody just – it is survival of the fittest, and you now say it's about making it to the playoffs. It's about winning enough games to try and get to the playoffs. We don't care about our division or conference that much anymore. We understand where we're supposed to go, and it's all about the playoffs now. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, just try and win as many games as we can. We're building a roster to compete with the top – we're building conferences to compete with the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yep. Yeah. No, it is. It really is a great conversation. And so if you got a different choice other than the ones that are listed by my man Patrick for the topic for the Big Fat Poll today, who will win the Big 12 this year, just list it in the comments below. And I really want to see how many other teams are going to be listed, because I think you could make the argument for at least four teams. You probably can make the argument for more than that if you actually did some research, some deep dive research on the Big 12. I will admit I have not done that research as yet, and why would I? Because that's our old league. I'm doing research on the SEC.
Yes.
In fact, we'll get into some of that in Rod's Round of the Day. I got some SEC research I'm going to share with you guys. I'm doing research on Texas opponents. But, yeah, Utah and Oklahoma State feel like the picks for me, but Avery Johnson going off for K-State makes them a front runner. And then Colorado. I mean, we don't know what the hell Colorado's roster looks like because it's turned over like twice already since Deion has been there. But you know Deion can recruit. You know he can recruit. He's got more NIL, you know, more NIL resources than they've had there ever. Now that Deion has really kind of brought the eyeballs and the headlines and all the media attention to Colorado. And so, you know, they got a quarterback that's going to be potentially a first rounder. I think he will be a first rounder in Shedeur Sanders. So you could make the argument they got the best quarterback in that conference. And you know they got talent. You know there's talent there. Travis Hunter might is also – they have – is there any team in the Big 12 with two first-round picks right now on the roster?
I don't know
if there is. In the Big 12, I don't know if there are two – a team with two – they got two of them, Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. They're both probably going to be in top 20 picks. Anybody in the Big 12 got that?
No.
That alone should put Colorado in the conversation to be a Big 12
contender. Because Utah did last season if Cam Rising played. But that was when they had that tight end that was supposed to be really good.
Yeah, they did have a really good tight end.
And then Cam Rising. So they had some players that were – Utah was supposed to be there but didn't with the injuries and age now, those players. Do you think they might fall out of the top, you know, because once you get over a certain age, they're not looking at you as a top prospect as a quarterback anymore.
No, because if you were a top prospect, you'd have left when you were younger.
Well, then again, Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. are proving that wrong this year. But
that is true. For the most part, you're right. That is proven that proved it wrong. But I will say they had just them – they had to transfer so that they could go elsewhere to reach their ceiling. And Michael Penix had, what, three injuries early in his career?
Yeah.
Usually guys who have that many injuries and guys who are that old don't get drafted high. So I'm with you. Those guys were exception and not the rule. We'll see if that becomes a trend now that they want those older quarterbacks. But those guys were really old.
Like, yeah.
Usually guys were that old.
No, I mean, that's what we say. They're Trey Lance age, and Trey Lance has been around for a minute now.
Exactly. No, I'm with you. So I don't know if that's an outlier. We'll see this draft if that's going to be more of a trend. But I think Cam Rising does have, you're right, that kind of potential as a quarterback. I just don't know if anybody else in the Big 12 has two first-round guys, like guaranteed first-round picks. So that's why Colorado should be in it. So good conversation there for the topic for the Big Fat Poll today. All right, let's get informed, educated, and updated on all the top stories of the day, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss CeeDee Lamb's message to the folks out there who want to know his status on his contract negotiations, and we'll discuss who will start for the U.S. national basketball team at the Olympics. Apparently, that's been a hot topic as well. And we'll get into Rod's rant of the day. All of that. Before we do, let's get the Horn Headlines with my man Patrick Davis.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros send Ronyel Blanco to the mound tonight to beginning their series with the Florida Marlins. The Marlins are currently on a six-game home win streak, while the Astros have ridden a hot streak to within two games lead in the AL West. The Astros will still have to deal with two star players, Kyle Tucker and Justin Verlander, being out a little longer, as new reports indicate that both players will not be able to return until after the All-Star break. And the Rangers won their fourth straight with a 9-4 win over the Angels. John Gray weathered a three-run second inning to pick up his fourth win of the season, as the Rangers came back strong with five runs in the fourth. Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford both homered in the game, with Seager extending his hit streak to 13 games. Max Scherzer gets to start tonight, with the Rangers looking to start a run for the second half of the season. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. Appreciate those. Quick, before we get into this basketball discussion, CeeDee Lamb tweeted this out. He was basically tweeting about his football camp. He's having a football camp July 19th. 9th, 10th, and the 20th are his camps. And he was answering some questions, and then people started asking about his contract. So he tweeted this out yesterday. I'm not speaking about any contract negotiations. If that's your questions, you'll get zero answers from him. It's all about the kids. I'll say this about the CeeDee Lamb, and I was just looking at the Cowboys roster and who's basically in the last year of their contract, because, you know, we joke that basically everybody's in a contract year now for the Cowboys. It's a joke, but it's kind of the truth as well. Like, Dak Prescott is in the final year of his contract. All your quarterbacks are.
Yeah.
Trey Lance and Cooper Rush are all your quarterbacks are in the last year of their contract. Like, all your quarterbacks. That, I don't know if any other team in the NFL has that situation, where every first, second, and third string quarterbacks are all in last year, final year of their deal. That is kind of wild. That, I don't know. That's weird. They're going to pay Dak, I believe. I don't think this thing is going to go past Oxnard and training camp without Dak getting paid, and he will get his $60 million because – you know, he's coming off an MVP caliber season, the best season he's ever had. If you're the Cowboys, I don't see how you pivot now and pivot to a rebuild. That's crazy. But hey, I don't know if crazier things have happened, but right now I'll admit this is bizarre the way they are handling this. It's bizarre, but I just don't see it getting stranger and them letting Dak play his out the last year on his deal. So all the quarterbacks are in the contract year. Basically, your two top running backs are in a contract year. Zeke and Rico Dowdle, they're in their last year of their contract. CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Cooks, wide receivers 1 and 2, are in the last year of their contracts. And Zach Martin's in the last year of his deal. And you don't really know what you're going to do about Zach Martin. So quarterbacks 1, 2, and 3, running backs 1 and 2, wide receivers 1 and 2, all in contract years. But DeMarcus Lawrence also, don't forget about him. He's in a contract year, and that kind of makes sense. He's toward the end of his career. And then Jordan Lewis is another guy that's in a contract year. He just want to get all – oh, and don't forget about Mike Zimmer. But he was signed to a one-year deal. So I don't know if it makes him a contract year, but signed to a one-year deal. And usually if you sign the defensive coordinator to a one-year deal, I haven't checked, but usually that means the assistant coach is also on one-year deals. Because defensive coordinator, if it could bring somebody in, then they're going to be bringing in their own people. So how many people within the organization, important pieces of the organization right now, are all in the contract year? It's wild. And like I said, it seems intentional. It just seems like you wouldn't get here handling business as usual if you're the Cowboys. This seems deliberate. Or it seems like a flustercluck of a situation for the Cowboys. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that too, so I started doing some research. But that's crazy. That's a contract conundrum. Like I said, it could end up being a disastrous situation, but it doesn't strike me that this is a coincidence. This seems intentional, right? It's like, how else would you get there with all of these important pieces being in the last year of their contract? And basically, you're ready to wipe the slate clean offensively next season.
Yeah, I tried to count quickly there. I had 33 players on their roster that contract in 2024.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so I wonder how many more of those on, because it seems like offense, it seems like more of it is on offense, but I could be wrong about that. But the important pieces on offense, you're talking about all three quarterbacks, top two wide receivers, top two running backs. So maybe that's where it is. Maybe there's going to be some offensive overhaul, but I don't see how you could do it without Dak. You got to start with Dak.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to go through and look the roster and see who's still going to be under. I mean,
yeah. They got some work to do.
You got Jalen Tolbert next year.
I don't even know if they know who's going to be the third receiver. I think it's talking about Jalen Tolbert, or there's another Jalen. Isn't there two Jalens? Am I missing something? But yeah, I think they. I can't. There's no way I can fathom that being like a coincidence. Like, to me, this is because there are within your organization, there are certain mechanisms in place that keep this from happening. Right, that's what, you know what I mean? That's why you got guys, you sign extensions. I mean, you have capologists, and you have people that whose job it is to keep up with, hey, you know, this guy's contract is coming up. Do you want to re-sign him at a cheaper rate, or you want to let him play out the last year in his deal? And when they're having that conversation, they basically have all decided, no, let him play out the last year in his deal. We'll just let him play it out. And it can't be the case. So my prediction is that two of the – Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb will be signed.
Yeah.
And then maybe because of that money, everything else will be revamped, because they know they're going to devote so much, $60 million to Dak, $30-plus million. So you're going to have basically $90-something million devoted to two players on offense, and they know that's all we can devote to offense, man. Everybody else is going to be the cheap basically the cheap version of it. We got to get the Costco version of everything else, or the, you know what I mean? The you got to get whatever the cheaper version is of that number two receiver. You ain't going to be able to get the name brand. you can't be able to afford it. Or you got to go to free agency to get mercenary deals and get veterans that are signed some mercenary deals at a cheaper discounted rate. And maybe that's what they know, and that's why they know, hey, we got to pay Dak, got to pay CD, but everybody else, including Zach Martin, we might have to reevaluate depending on the cost of it.
No, and that's why there still is that thought that they may just say, screw it, we're going to keep the defense, and this offense is getting completely overhauled. But you still have to trade CD Lamb if you do that. I mean, that's the one piece that is super valuable. You know you can get a first-round pick for. You know you can get real talent for with CD Lamb. Dak Prescott, you could probably get a first for. But that becomes a bigger problem with dead cap and other things if you re-sign him and trade him off. So it's easier to do with CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't mean for that to be like a segment in itself, but I saw that and I was like, that is crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I'm not even a Cowboys fan, and I think
You have three offensive linemen who are under contract for a while that are your starting offensive linemen, and Terrence Steele and Guyton and Cooper Beebe. You're drafted. Right. Those are your three offensive linemen. You expect that for a while. But even Jalen Tolbert and Jake Ferguson, we expect to have a good year. He's up in 2025. Yeah. So he's not gone next year, but he's gone. You know, he'll be up.
Yeah, that's your Micah year, right? And that's your Micah year, too?
That's your Micah year as well. That's your Daron Bland year.
Oh, I forgot about that. Good one. Forgot about the Daron Bland year. That's how what you're going to do with him.
Yep.
He's going to want some big money.
Because he's making
he came off a big year.
$2 million this year, something like that? $2 million
this year? Yeah, he's going to want some big money.
He's making another right now.
I mean, I remember you saying it's not bad that they could have traded one of those guys, potentially traded Daron Bland at his height and got a lot of return for a guy they drafted, what, fifth round?
Something like that. But, yeah, his contract's really low right now. He's still under team control until another year. And he's still under contract for another year after this. So, depending on what you want to do, he's still available. There's still, if you want to make that move,
you still could do it. Yeah. Especially, hey, you need draft capital for the future. You need cheap talent, and you know you can get a lot of return on a good corner who was actually an all pro corner. So that would be great return on that. All right, good stuff there. Okay, I want to pick your brain here, Patrick, about this. It's not an NBA story. It's kind of an NBA story, but it's a basketball story. So we know Team USA, the Team USA roster for men's basketball. For those who haven't seen it, Devin Booker, Bam Adebayo, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Halliburton, Jrue Holiday, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Jason Tatum. Those are the players selected for the U.S. Men's National Team. And there's been discussion, Patrick, about who's going to be the starters. Because LeBron James, apparently, there's a report from, I saw it in the New York Times, and it said Team USA is unlikely to bring LeBron James off the bench. Not going to happen. Said, quote, James coming off the bench probably won't happen. I spoke with two USA basketball sources, and both cast serious doubt on the idea. James, the source said, will likely play point forward for the Americans as a starter, moving Curry off the ball. So there's kind of implying here that LeBron's going to start and Steph Curry's going to start. What are your thoughts? Because some people are saying, well, is LeBron one of the best five players? But I don't even know if that matters. It's LeBron. He's one of the biggest names, and he's one of the GOATs. So LeBron is going to start, right?
Yeah, and there's always this thing about starting. It's who finishes the game. Everyone.
Okay, let's do both. Let's do who finishes the game.
But who finishes a game is an in-game decision, because who finishes a game is who's playing well, who's out there, who's playing defense, who's shooting well. But that's who you want to be, is the guy who you go, look, they didn't start me. I came in, 8 minutes into the game and dominated, and they had to finish me. They had to play me at the end of the game. That's what you want to be. Being the starter in this, I mean, if you're one of these young guys like Anthony Edwards or Tyrese Halliburton, or, Devin Booker, or someone who's a little bit younger, say, no, I'm going to get that in 4 years. I'll be the starter. It's the way it's always been in Dream Team and in Team USA. You wait your turn, and the main guys, because you expect to play more minutes than the starters.
That's true.
You're expected to play more minutes. Those guys are going to start. They're going to come out. They're going to set the tone. They're going to be a little bit more careful with the basketball. They're going to play a little bit more team basketball because they know what they're in. They're not doing it. They've been there before. They know what the situation is. And they expect you to come off the bench with all this energy and ready to go prove yourself. That's how it's always been. I know that, players don't want to come out in interviews and it's thought of as weak now to come out in an interview and say, oh, I'll do whatever the coach wants me to do. I'll be a good – that it's thought of, you if you do that, you're a weakling. And
you ain't got that dog in you.
Yeah.
You got that dog.
And so I think there's lines in between that because, like, Jason Tatum can come out and say, I should be the starter. And everybody goes, you're still not a dog. We know – like, prove it on the court. All the talk in between and these guys, and yeah, we've seen Anthony Edwards has his, yeah, I'm still the number one option. Like, no, you're not. Like, the seventh option. Remember how you didn't? Remember how you couldn't beat the Mavs with a more stacked lineup? You ain't the number one option.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that because we know there's a guy in Slovenia who's way better than you.
That's a good point. You're right about that.
It's what it is. And so it's, I get it. You can say that, but you haven't proven it yet. You know, you've had 3 months, you've had three quarters of a good, like, really good season. And so Steph Curry is going to be your starting point guard, LeBron James. I think you can talk about who you're going to start at center. And is it going to be Anthony Davis or is it going to be Joel Embiid? I think that's a real question.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Who
you start there. Do you give it to the more veteran Anthony Davis and then let Joel Embiid come back in? You know, is that the question? Where do you put Jason Tatum in this lineup? Is he one of the guys? Are you playing – who are you playing at power forward? Are you starting two bigs, or are you going to go a little bit small, more small ball? You probably put Kevin Durant there in the four.
I was saying the KD start, yeah.
You put KD, yeah. And so then you go, okay, what's the rest of the lineup
now? What about a healthy Kawhi? Does a healthy Kawhi start?
A healthy Kawhi could start, but then again, you're going really big. You're going like all three wings, basically, at that.
Yeah,
so you go
true.
Steph Curry, LeBron James.
Yeah, that's a point for it. Okay.
So you could, I mean, if Kawhi Leonard's healthy and he wants to go in there and play with a smaller guard, you could go
that's
with him,
point, yeah.
But I don't know if there's. I know the young guys don't want to come out and say, "I'm okay taking the back seat." And I think the reality is just, hey, let me get my time in the game. That's all I care about. Would I rather start and play 10 minutes, or would I rather come off the bench and play 30 and dominate for 30 and show? And then everyone talks about who won the Olympics. It's gonna be the guy who goes out there and plays the best.
Okay, so you're basically – no, that's a good point, though, about it, too. So you're saying the guy who closes the game, the guy who closes the game, that's more – the seniority is going to get the guys the starts, basically.
Yeah.
LeBron said that's the seniority who closes out the game. So who are their best five – is that based on the matchup, right? Is that based on –
it's based on the matchup.
They got a big man that can score, or they got a guy, perimeter guy that's lighting you up. Like, does that determine it?
Yeah, and it matters if you're playing defense on them. Because, I mean, you can see Drew Holiday in some of these games
exactly.
late.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like, hey, man, this dude on the perimeter, man, he's giving us some problems. Like, put your own.
Again, you're playing a guy like Luka Doncic. Who are you going
to
– why would you not put a guy who just played him in the NBA Finals and gave him fits?
Yep, totally agree with you.
And so I think that, there is matchup, but it is. It's always in basketball, people freak out a lot about who the starter is, and it's this big role, and I get – there's money involved in it down the line, and if you're on your team, you don't want to be coming off the bench unless there's a great reason for it. You're on Team USA. Someone's got to go on the bench. And if you think, well, man, I'm up and coming. I'm going to be great. So LeBron James, who has been great for the last 20 seasons, should take a back seat. Then what are you going to do when it's your turn?
Yes, we're
– are you going to take – no, because you're going to go out and fight for it. I get it. I'm fine with you fighting for it, but at the same point – you know, those guys are not going to bow down either. Just say, I'm going to go out there and prove I'm going to play more minutes than him, probably. LeBron doesn't want to play.
No.
Play.
LeBron wants to play his 10 to 15 and then go in the back.
He wants to get a lead. But this is the problem. This is now the, you know, the gap has been shrunk a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you say that first game is going to be, the first exhibition game is tomorrow versus Canada. That Canada team is stacked.
It's stacked, man. Yeah. You're right about that, because all those is SGA on that team?
SGA's on that team.
Yeah, no, that Canada team, man, I'm with you. It's underrated. No, you're right about that. Hell, all the MVPs lately from the NBA have been international players.
And
so
like Canada
team
just saw Zach Edey's not going to do it because he's trying to get ready for the NBA. And because he played so late in the season in college, he decided to step out. But Zach Edey was, especially because in, you know, you get into the FIBA rules, and in FIBA rules there's not goaltending. Once it touches the rim, you can swat it off. When you have guys like Rudy Gobert and Victor Wembanyama in France, or when you have guys like Zach Edey
right
from Canada, they just take it right off the rim.
Man, oh, I didn't realize that. So you don't get that friendly bounce. Like, nope, I got that.
Yeah, swat it right out of there. There isn't that goaltending.
Oh, man. I did not realize that. That is a game-changing rule right there. That's very different.
Yeah, that's FIBA rules. Yeah. Because in FIBA, they don't always have the biggest guys, and so it was not as big of a thing. But when you all of a sudden put in these now 7'5", 7'6" guys.
Avatars, you can just, who's basically with just their reach, they can take it right off the rim.
Because Zach Edey and Wimby both have pictures of them hanging onto a rim with their feet touching the ground.
That is freaky, man. I didn't realize that at all. That French team is going to be pretty damn good.
Yeah, they'll be good as well.
At least defensively.
Yeah, and it's always a question is, can those guys play long minutes and can they score at a high enough rate? But it's going to be a big run, and that's – if Team USA wants to come out and complain and make it all about who's who, then this will be a year that will go down. This will not be a great year for Team USA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. I think they're not going to let that get in the way.
I think they're going to play some of these exhibition games, get put a little bit more back in their place. Apparently, they played a game against the select team, so like the younger team, but Cooper Flagg, who is the best up and coming, they're supposed to be the number one pick next season. They played against him. They won by a point.
Whoa.
Team USA won by a point.
Wow.
They apparently had a big lead and then blew it, and the young team came back. So, as I'm saying, this is not a foregone conclusion. There's some really great players, but if you don't play as a team, and these other people all really want to play for their country, and a lot of the people on this team are, at least early on, are trying to keep up their image. Because they're they just want to show that they've got that dog in them. Hey, man, sometimes you got to play team ball.
No, I'm with you. That's a great point, man, because we've seen the dream team lose. Never thought it could happen. Oh, but we've seen it happen before, and you're right about that gap. It seems to be shrinking between the international level of play and the NBA, certainly. All right, good stuff there. We come back. We'll have Raj rant on the other side. I'll dive into why the Aggies may be one of the best, if not the best, passing offense Texas is going to face next year. I know. Been doing some research. I'll share some details that I found right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into Rod's Rant of the Day. So I've been doing some research about Texas' upcoming opponents and doing some research on the Aggies, of course, too, because they're going to be rekindling that rivalry. A lot of people believe it's going to be the game of the year in the SEC. Not only that, I said it's going to be bigger than Oklahoma this year. Darren Jeremiah agreed with me, and so did Paul Feinbaum. He said it'll be the game of the year in the SEC. But I was doing some research about their passing game, and I remember I told you guys that not only the metrics, the advanced metrics, but some of the these projections and some of the advanced models for Pro Football Focus and some other data science platforms, they think Connor Wegman is going to be really good. And they're not the only ones. Remember, Matt Miller had his way too early 2025 draft, and he had Connor Wegman going to the Rams, right, at 19th overall in the draft. Got him as a first-round prospect. And I told you guys that, some of the, like I said, the analytical models, when they extrapolate, because he's only played, like, I think, 7 games or something like that. When they extrapolate, potentially some of his numbers as being some of the top numbers in the Power 5 for any starting quarterback, which I'll give you those in a second. But I saw another breakdown. Shout out to Dog Stats. And they were doing a breakdown of receiving stats in the SEC for returning targets and returning receiving yards and receiving numbers, receiving stats, targets, yards, snaps, receptions, receiving touchdowns. They even did drops too. But they had a certain criteria though. So they looked at receiving stats, basically receiving targets. for receivers who had at least 25 targets, so a minimum of at least 25 targets, so returning receivers with at least 25 targets, and at least a 70 Pro Football Focus grade. That was the cutoff. And based on that cutoff, the Aggies actually have the top returning receiving room in the SEC, or most productive receiving room in the SEC, based on that cutoff. 211 targets returned. This includes transfers that have transferred in. I think they got one transfer out of Troy, who's a really good player. I won't say 1,000-yard receiver. I believe he had 1,000 yards from scrimmage. A really good player. The other two receivers for them, the main ones, make sure I get his name, Jadae Walker and Noah Thomas. The transfer, I believe, is Jabri Barber. Is his name. I hope I pronounced it correctly. But he's the one that had 115 targets, 985 yards at Troy. Was a really good player for them, transferred in with the Aggies. But based on this this criteria, at least a 70 Pro Football Focus grade, 25 targets, they have a 211 targets returning. In terms of total receiving, that's the most in the SEC. 1,934 yards returning. Like I said, based on the cutoff being at least 25 targets and at least a 70 Pro Football Focus grade, that's the most yards, all right, out of all the SEC teams in terms of returning production in your receiving core. Snaps, 211, also the most. Receptions, 140, also the most. Touchdowns, 12, tied for the most. Also the most drops, too, which means a lot of room for improvement already. In terms of production, bringing back the most production, but then you look at drops, had 14 drops. That is the most. That means they cut that down, cut that number in half, and you can be talking about even more productivity from that group. You go look at total receiving, even without the cutoff of the 70 Pro Football Focus grade, minimum 25 targets, 425 targets, also the most in terms of returning receiving production. 3,705 receiving yards based on these stats. Also, the most returning receiving yards. Snaps, they're actually down. They're kind of in the middle of the SEC when it comes to snaps, total receiving snaps. Receptions, 283. That would be first in terms of returning receptions. In the SEC, 24 touchdowns with that group. That not the most. I think that puts them tied for, I think it's fourth, actually, on this list. And drops, overall, total receiving, they had the most drops in the SEC, too. So because of them having the most drops in the SEC, there's a lot of room for improvement, but they also have a lot of productivity, proven commodities returning for the Aggies. And in addition to that, they have Connor Wigman, who, if he can stay healthy, a lot of folks project to be a first-round pick. Like I said, Matt Miller just projected to be a first-round pick. He's 3.5 games that he played in 2023. And like I said, they extrapolate this, and they say they extrapolated this guy potentially projects to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. He had a 91 overall grade, 91.9 overall grade, and a 90.9 passing grade in 2023 in those four games that he played. His passing grade from a clean pocket, 92.6 passing grade by Pro Football Focus. His passing grade on early downs, 91.2. Passing grade without play action, 92.4. He also was 98th percentile in avoiding negative plays. He finished in the 88th percentile in avoiding sacks. And his offensive line wasn't that great. On third and seven or longer, so third and long, he had an 87.9 grade. Looking at him in unstable situations, he was in the 97th percentile. So, like I said, the metrics really like him. Film, I think he's got a lot of good raw material to work with. I mean, the guy was a five-star coming in, so I mean, he's got a lot of elite traits. Can he put it all together, and can he stay healthy? that will determine whether he can be effective in utilizing the returning production they have with their receiving core. And if that is the case, I mean, Carson Beck with Georgia, but like I said, Georgia doesn't return as much receiving core. They probably have a lot more high-end talent potentially, but the Aggies have been stockpiling talent for a little while too. And remember, they're bringing in new offensive coordinator Colin Klein. You know, with K-State, they were a more run-heavy team, and we'll see if that remains the case with Colin Klein going to the SEC. But with Connor Wigman, if you got a quarterback who probably is a better passer than he is a runner, certainly the case with Connor Wigman, I wonder if they'll be more pass-oriented, especially with the numbers I just gave you and the returning production they have in their receiving room. So when you look at the passing offenses that Texas is going to face, I mean, Carson Beck is the best quarterback you're going to face. Like I said, there's a chance Connor Wigman is the second best quarterback you're going to face because he's projected to be a first-rounder too. And I think Oklahoma probably has the best receiving core right now that you're going to face overall. They have the best receiving core, and they got some good players. Nick Anderson is really good. He had, 60 targets last year, 38 receptions, 796. He was a really good player for Oklahoma. They'll have Andrell Anthony, who's another guy, who's a really good player for Oklahoma. He'll be another threat. Jake Roberts is another guy they got. So Oklahoma will have a good crop of wide receivers, probably better than the Aggies, but we don't know what they're going to get out of Jackson Arnold, the quarterback, because, you know, we just really hadn't seen much out of Jackson Arnold, so we don't really know what he's going to bring to the table. He's also a five-star guy. He could be the second-best quarterback Texas plays, too. We just don't know because he's an unproven commodity. So it could be Oklahoma, the second or the best passing attack you face all year. It could be them. But remember, they lost their offensive coordinator, lost their entire offensive line. So they got a lot to replace. And I think the Aggies have a little bit more stability there. So we'll see. Don't sleep on the Aggies passing attack. Like I said, definitely one of the top three passing attacks that you may face next year. Kentucky might be in that conversation too, but they have a new quarterback they brought in via the transfer portal. They got new weapons on offense they got to get acclimated to. So Texas won't face a lot of elite passing offenses this season, at least based on the preseason preseason prep and all of the research that I'm doing. But doesn't mean that one of those offenses won't transform into a very lethal passing attack. And I think if you're predicting one or two, it would be the Aggies or the Sooners. And right now, I'd say the Aggies are probably trending a little bit more that way than the Sooners are right now. And remember, Georgia doesn't really want to be that. And the Todd Monken is kind of an admirer of the air raid offense. So Todd Monken will spread it out. Now he's with Baltimore and he'll spread it out. But that's not really what Georgia wants to do. Georgia wants to be real balanced, and Georgia wants to pound you into submission at times too, and not always spread you out. So it depends on the intention and the philosophy, the kind of the motivation of the offense and their identity as well. But there you go. The Aggies, it's possible. Like I said, Connor Wigman might be the second best quarterback you face. And if that's the case, the Aggies might be the second-best passing offense you face. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into what the facts, what the stats on the other side. I got a couple of stats, NFL nuggets to share with you. We'll do that when we come back and also dive back into the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
With all due respect, what the
facts? Statistics. Statistics.
I'm stating facts, 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 facts.
When I go ahead and check the stats, yeah. Numbers gone, it's a fact. Yeah. Go ahead and check the stats. Yeah. The
lights. That's facts.
Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep, yep. Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep.
Statistics.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get to some what the facts, what the stats here. Okay, so Here's a stat for you about C.J. Stroud. I got a couple of stats for you, NFL-related, a few of these. We'll get to NFL owners' net worth here in a second. I saw that list out there, so we'll get to some of those numbers. But C.J. Stroud, I've seen this stat, or at least I've heard this stat, and I haven't heard it in this much detail. So C.J. Stroud, we all know that he led the NFL in passing yards and touchdown-to-interception ratio, first rookie to do so. But he's the fourth quarterback to do it over the last 35 years in the NFL. And the other three are Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and John Elway. The other three quarterbacks to lead the NFL in touchdown-interception ratio in basically to do it in the last 35 years. Neither one of those quarterbacks, though, did it in their first 7 years. Brady, Manning, or Elway, they didn't do it in their first 7 years. It took them at least 7 years to get to the point where they can lead the NFL in passing yards and touchdown interception ratio. And C.J. Stroud did it as a rookie. Fourth one to do it in 35 years.
It's pretty impressive there.
It is. It is, man. Like I said, his second year, if he takes a leap, then good Lord, what is it going to look like? Like, what is a leap from that? I mean, that's already numbers that – kind of argue he's a top 10 quarterback, period. All right, net worth of each NFL owner. Man, these are drastically. There's some the drop-offs from like 1 to 2 and then from like, from like 8 to 9. It's just some big-time drop-offs. So the richest owner now in the NFL, of course, is Rob Walton, Walmart family Walton. $77 billion is the net worth. The Hunt family is next at $24.8 billion. Isn't that crazy?
That's a
big drop off.
That's like Steve Ballmer in the NBA. Steve Ballmer and then everybody else.
Yes. Yep. You know what? That's kind of what the Waltons are. I mean, you're talking about billionaires. The Hunt family second. Dave Tepper, Panthers, $20.6 billion. Jody Allen. Seahawks, $20.3 billion. Stan Kroenke of the Rams, $16.2 billion. Johnson family of the Jets, $16 billion. Jared Jones, $13.8 billion. Then Shad Khan, $12.2 billion. And Robert Kraft right there, $11.1 billion. So there you go. That's everybody of that's got more than $10 billion, that's worth more than $10 billion. After that, it's $10 billion and below. So everybody, that's more than $10 billion. The more than $10 billion club in the league. There's one owner who's not worth a billion. Who do you think? Remember, the Packers don't have an owner. They're owned by the people.
Yeah, yeah.
So who do you think is the one owner who's not worth $1 billion? There's one owner that's not worth $1 billion.
Spanos?
No, Spanos is at $2.4 billion.
Okay.
It's Mike Brown, Cincinnati.
Okay. Yeah.
Not at $25 million. He's like poor compared to like the Walton family. No, I mean, he's ridiculously rich, but compared to like the Waltons and the Hunt family, you know, they probably think Mike Brown is like impoverished somehow.
Yeah.
There you go. So those are some numbers on the richest owners.
Yeah. You know, those families have like babies that have a trust fund with more money than Mike Brown has in it.
Yes. Yes, literally the baby is born with like a $1 billion trust fund.
Yeah,
and Mike, exactly right. And more money. Yeah, you're right. I can't even fathom how much money that is.
A Mike baby Brown. That could own the Bengals.
Yes, it's a that would be great. I love that. That sounds like that could be like some random Disney movie where some kid born with a trust fund.
Yeah, sounds like a cartoon show like back in the day.
Yeah, it really does. All right, yeah, some Richie Rich stuff. Okay, how about this? I got another one for you. I got another random stat and factoid for you. I just got to make sure I find it here. Okay, yeah, how about this one? Okay, so Will Levis, A-dot is average depth of target, so it's the average depth of the target you're trying to throw the football down the field. And I was looking at some of his A-dot numbers last year, just doing research on the NFL. I'm going week 17. I'm going to go work my way backwards. I'm going to go week 17 to 15. I think he missed week 16. His 8 average depth of target in week 17 was 17.6 yards. In week 15, it was 15.3. In week 14, it was 9. In week 13, it was 8. 8, 7. It was 11 in week 10. It was 10 in week 9. It was 12 in week 8. Like, he's chunking it down the field. Like, hell, Patrick Mahomes' average depth of target, guys, this year was less than 7. It was like 6.9 yards, I think, something like that was like his average depth of target on like his touchdown throw. It's crazy how I got to start looking at some Will Levis film. He's just chunking the ball downfield. I don't think he's doing – I don't see who the receivers are. I don't even know he's chunking the ball downfield too. Yeah, I guess D. Yeah,
and
D-hop.
Then what's that? Was it Arkansas receiver they grabbed? Trey Burke? Is that his?
Traylon Burks or something
Traylon Burks,
like that, right?
The guy they're bringing back to replace AJ Brown.
I got to start watching it. Yeah, because average depth of target last year for Patrick Mahomes. Here's Patrick Mahomes' average depth of target since 2017. 7.4, 9.2, 8.6, 8.0, 7.0, 7.1, 6.5. You got Will Levis chunking. He's averaging 17. His average depth of target is 17 yards.
That's crazy.
In some weeks. It's crazy what's going on. I got a success. Got to start watching some film and see how Will Levis. But I will say this. We'll get into it. That's going to be a separate segment. Something I was impressed with Will Levis. So we'll get into that. That'll be a separate segment because I want to get into some quarterback discussion. I've been doing some rabbit holing about the NFL and looking up clutch genes and stuff like that. So we'll talk about that later. I don't want to get into it now because we don't have enough time. And I don't want to be getting into it right when we need to get to a break. So let's get to the break. We'll come back. We'll get into Quinn Ewers, EA Sports College Football Video Game Ratings. We'll also get into the attendees, which have been announced for SEC Media Days for the Longhorns, and talk about why Jadae Barron might be one of the most underrated DBs in recent DBU history here at the University of Texas. All that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.